there, folks, and welcome to another episode of the Is It Over Yet Wrestling podcast with me, Dan Cooper, and the Jesse Ventura to my Gorilla Monsoon, Sam Whaley. What is up, dude?
Hey, how's it going?
I'm all right, thank you very much. What about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, this podcast is due to fall round about Friday the 13th, which for some people is slightly unlucky. Some people kind of just shake it off.
I think I just pretty much shake it off.
I did not anticipate you ever squeezing that onto the podcast, my friends. So congratulations to you. Awesome. But yeah, I hope everybody enjoyed our brand new segment last week, World of Trios. We're going to launch into another one right now. Folks, welcome to another edition of World of Trios. I think we explained last week how World of Trios work, but just in case you're catching us for the first time, it's broken down into three sections. That's three things that we really liked that week. We'll give you three items of news, and then the third section is kind of interchangeable, so it could be three things we didn't like, it could be three things regarding a pay-per-view that's going on, it could be anything. We're going to start off with the three things that we liked about this week.
The good.
And the very first thing was the Cody Rhodes, or Cody, as he's known on the independents at the moment, Cody Rhodes versus Kenny Omega from the New Japan G1 special from San Francisco. So this was part of the G1 special, as I mentioned, which precedes the G1 Climax tournament, which we'll probably talk about in the future, and it acts as a showcase of talent for US fans. So this match saw Bullet Club members Cody and Kenny contending for leadership after tension in the team. So for a while it looked like Bullet Club were going to implode, and this was in part due to Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Kota Ibushi forming a subgroup within the Bullet Club called the Golden Elite. The match itself was pretty intense. It was not your typical kind of technical Kenny Omega match, and while still displaying both men's technical skill, we got some really nasty bumps as well. So the first nasty bump here was when both men kind of fought to suplex each other off a ladder in the ring through a table on the outside. What actually happened was Cody suplexed Kenny Omega from the super tall ladder into the ring, so that's a horrible flat back bump into the ring, and it looks really, really painful. It didn't look like anything you see in WWE these days, because usually that kind of thing is stopped by a table or something like that. But no, this was straight onto the ring. It looked nasty. Yeah, and the second bump came where Kenny threw Cody out of the ring, aiming for a table, but the table didn't break, so Cody's back just smashed against this table, and it didn't break his fall. So again, another man hitting the floor really hard with nothing to break his fall. It just looked absolutely hideous.
Yeah, I think that's something that happens quite a lot in Japanese wrestling from what I've heard. Like I say, I'm a proper noob to this type of thing. You sort of get a lot of memes about the super hard Japanese tables.
It didn't look like it was going to break. It just kind of slid backwards out of the way, and Cody had nothing to break his fall. You could see the Young Bucks on the outside kind of looking like, oh, man, that was supposed to break.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed this match for its intensity, and it kind of acted as a nice introduction to the New Japan style, which made me go back and watch the whole of the G1 special show, which I really enjoyed. Obviously, the end of this match came when Kenny Omega managed to pick up the win over Cody Rhodes. The thing that got people really talking here was the aftermath. So, and I think you managed to catch this, didn't you, dude? Kenny Omega was heading up the ramp to celebrate with the Bullet Club guys. Fellow Bullet Club members Tama Tonga, his brother Tanga, otherwise known as Camacho in the WWE, and Father Haku, and they laid out the Bullet Club members. So we got like a turn here. We got a Bullet Club turn, a bit of a fracture. Eventually, Cody tried to make the save and obviously come back and help his Bullet Club brethren, but he was also laid out. So, as I say, we've got a massive fracture in the Bullet Club here, with three members looking to establish their own dominance as they look to show the other members who's in charge. What did you think of this angle, dude?
Do you think they'll have Bullet Club Black and White and Bullet Club Red and White Wolfpack?
I don't know, man. I think that they've named these guys the Firing Squad, from what I can see, which is an unusual name. But yeah, it's looking to segment off that way, I do believe. I hope it doesn't the way of the NWO.
No. I don't know tons about New Japan. I watched a few highlights from the match. Looked like an absolutely brilliant match to me. Obviously, I've seen the Kenny Omega stuff with Okada. I'll always watch stuff when I've heard about how amazing it is. It's great to see Haku again. I had no idea that he was part of New Japan.
Me neither.
Long gone.
That was a massive surprise, yeah. He actually got a move in here. He got a pile driver in at the end, which was nuts.
Yeah. It looked like he needed a lot of help with it, though, which was very strange.
I assume he's in his 60s now, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, he's 59. I Wikipedia'd it after I'd seen this.
I see.
But yeah, the throat chops and things like that, it looks rubbish, doesn't it? But you've just got to respect Haku, because you know that if he gave you an actual throat chop, I think he'd probably chop your head off.
I believe Haku's got a reputation in the business as being one of the like kind of hard man of wrestling, you know, men of wrestling, sorry. He's got this kind of thing around him where he's a really nice guy, apparently, but if you mess with him, bad things are going to happen to you.
There was the thing, weren't there, when a long time ago when DX invaded WCW,
yep.
The main fear that they had was that Haku was going to come out and take them all out.
Yeah, in real life, like as a shoot. So, not to be messed with. And he certainly kind of looked good standing alongside his sons here. It's going to be a Samoan faction, I believe, which from an interview I've read, it looks like they're not kind of separating the Bullet Club, but kind of Tama Tonga, the guy who's leading the kind of attack here, is looking to establish himself as the leader. I think his main motive is the fact that Kenny Omega, the Young Bucks, and Kota Ibushi formed this new Golden Elite thing within the Bullet Club, and he didn't like that kind of divide. So yeah, it's an angle that's talked about quite a lot at the moment, all over the internet. Hopefully we'll see more. I think I generally only catch New Japan when it's in the headlines, but from this event, I'll be watching it a bit more. So yeah.
I think I'm definitely going to give it a go. I know I'm always one of these people who's like, man, not bothered. But yeah, I think I'll try.
Yeah, man. It's one of them things where, just like me with that kind of 205 Live, you know, you dip in every now and again.
I'm the same as you, but on this sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, man.
So I will give it a try.
Anyway, onto our second topic of discussion here. We got a great match between Drew McIntyre and Seth Rollins on Monday Night Raw this week. And the war between Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler and Drew McIntyre has been raging for a good few weeks now. Dolph is currently the Intercontinental Champion, and he comes out to interrupt Seth here, who is in the ring, talking about reclaiming his Intercontinental title. So Seth basically runs both men down, calls Drew a Scottish Wookiee, and kind of downplays his role as Dolph's sidekick, which leads to Drew challenging Seth to a match.
Just going back to the part before the match.
Do it.
The Seth promo. Please stop writing promos for wrestlers, because it's rubbish.
Yeah.
This was definitely a downside to this whole thing. I don't want to take anything away from the match, but the promo sucked. And
is this the promo from Seth you're referring to?
From Seth, yeah.
Okay.
But the way that he calls out Drew and the Scottish Wookiee and the whole sheep thing, I just thought it was just bad taste. And
so I believe he referred rubbish. To, he kind of implied Drew had been doing stuff with sheep.
It's just not a really great wrestling promo, is it? It's, you know, whatever happened to I'm going to kick your ass.
Exactly, it was a cheap laugh.
I don't like the WWE writers. That's the worst part. But onto the wrestling. Absolutely superb. Both guys look awesome. This is a classic big man versus little man match, but done in the right way, so that you've got your, you know, Drew gets a lot of offense in this, but he would do because he's the big guy.
Yep.
But when Seth makes the comebacks, it just makes it build and build and build and build. Although Drew is the heel and the big guy, that normally leads them to be sort of the one that's left looking red-faced at the end.
Yep.
But Drew shows true intelligence as well as size and as well as heel tendencies. So, yeah, I really like this.
Yeah, man, I loved it. And I thought it was great to see a match where Seth wasn't kind of carrying the whole match, because obviously Drew's had a lot of experience, and he more than held his own as kind of a match leader here.
Yeah.
And, he even picked up the win. So, I mean, it was off the distraction from Dolph Ziggler, but, you know, how else is it going to happen building up to a title match? And they're the heels. So, the build to this match has been one of the better builds to Extreme Rules, as far as I'm concerned. And I don't know. We kind of live in hope that they're going to give us a really good 30-minute Iron Man match. I'm looking for a breakout performance from Drew as well. I want to see him do something nefarious. But this was a really great match on Raw. It was one of the standout moments in another Raw that was kind of throwaway. So, yeah.
It was a really good TV match.
It was.
Yeah, I mean, talking of TV matches.
Speaking of TV matches. Yeah. Yeah, that was a great TV match. But point number three is undoubtedly one of the best TV matches we're going to see any time in the future. And that was ever, indeed. And that was Mustache Mountain versus the Undisputed Era on NXT. So we had a lot of things going on NXT-wise this week. But we're reserving this special place for this awesome, awesome piece of tag team wrestling. So it's a match from the NXT UK tournament, a rematch from the NXT UK tournament, where Mustache Mountain picked up their first NXT title win over Undisputed Era. The match starts out on the attack from Undisputed Era and things go back and forth for a little while. But the thing about this match, man, it was the psychology. It was just absolutely fantastic. The storytelling. Tell us a little bit more about this match, dude.
I don't really want to give too much away.
Yeah, you want to let people experience
it,
right?
If you haven't watched it, yeah, you need to watch it. I think you've got a piece in your notes here that was just, it's one of the best things that you ever see from Tyler Bate. And it's where he does the aeroplane spin and the big swing both in one go. And I just love that. They do a lot of things where it gives Mauro a chance to say that Tyler Bate has Herculean strength. And he does have Herculean strength. It's incredible what he does. Because it goes from this straight into the deadlift German suplex.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh my God, this kid is awesome.
He really is, man. And I know you say you don't want to give stuff away, but we can't really talk about the full impact of this match without giving away what happened. And I really want to talk to you about what happened here, especially the ending, because it was amazing. Because Tyler Bate obviously needed the tag. He was a little bit tired, but Trent Seven had his leg worked on for the whole match. He's severely injured, resting on the apron. Tyler Bate decides not to tag him in and takes a bit more of a kind of beating. Eventually, he has to tag in Trent Seven, though. And Trent doesn't last very long, does he, dude? He's kind of getting a proper shellacking submission-wise from the Undisputed Era. And Tyler Bate just can't stand to watch it anymore. I mean, I think Trent's locked in one of these submission moves for about 3-4 minutes. And obviously, wrestling match-wise, that's a long time.
Very long time. But
yeah,
it was by no means did it ever get boring.
No, not at all, because you were just hoping and praying.
I was sat there with my hand over my mouth. I felt like, watching this, I was more on the edge of my seat than I was watching the last 30 minutes of the England match last night. That it was just I felt more emotionally attached to this match than I did to the football. I thought any minute now, Tyler's just going to jump in and break the hold. And or either that or any minute now he's going to tap or any minute now he's going to hulk up and get out of the hold.
Yeah.
You don't see this type of thing. I just thought it was absolutely spectacular, like, storytelling.
It really was, and I think the main crux of this was Tyler Bate, you know, empathetic, awesome human being. He's kind of already made the save once in the match for his friend. He doesn't want to do that again, but he can't stand to see his friend suffering there, injured in the middle of the ring, so eventually he takes the towel that those guys have at ringside and he throws it in, indicating the end of the match, you know, we give in kind of thing. So Undisputed Era capture the NXT Tag Team Championships again.
I'm gutted. I am gutted.
Yeah.
The thing is, I'm in two minds because I love the Undisputed Era as well. I cannot stand Kyle O'Reilly.
I think that's the point, though. I mean, does that guy not sell himself?
I'm not saying he's a rubbish wrestler. It's just I can't stand his character. I hate him.
He's just the best at playing this disgustingly conniving heel. It's the way he moves, isn't it?
He's like a little rat, isn't he? He's like a weasel.
It's the worst, but God, he's amazing in the ring. He is one of the better athletes in that faction. I mean, obviously you've got Roddy and Adam Cole, but Kyle O'Reilly, he knows what to do and when to do it.
His submissions just look like the submission that he had on Trent Seven just looked painful as hell.
Yeah, man.
You got to compare it to like John Cena's STF. Do you know what I'm saying? There is no comparison.
There really isn't. At least they lock the move in properly in this match to make it seem like it's an actual submission. That's no dig at John Cena.
I felt like I could feel Trent Seven's pain.
Yeah, man.
I could feel Tyler Bates Payne on the apron.
Yeah, and yeah, because...
That makes these guys as special as they are.
I mean, the main story they were telling is that you've got this kind of almost father-son-like relationship between Trent and Tyler, trainer and trainee, and the story was... Unlike some of these muddy storylines you get in WWE, it was crystal clear. It was just one man's injury and his reluctance to give in, while his good friend saw the bigger picture and he gave up his time as a champion to make sure his friend would live to fight another day. Because if he'd have been locked in that submission, storyline-wise, anyway, yeah. any longer, he might not have been able to walk, so...
I don't know where this is going, but I'm excited to find out. I hope they haven't just taken the belts off him to ship him back off to UK NXT.
Yeah. Who knows? But I mean, even if that is the case, has this not just been the greatest spotlight for these two men? Has it not just made them look? I mean, in two or three matches, it's made them look better than any tag team I can think of on the main roster.
Yeah.
And that's not just because they're both technical and they're both kind of pleasing to watch in terms of ring style. It's because, like we say, storytelling, man. You don't get that emotional gravitas.
All four of them... You know, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, Tyler Bate, and Trent Seven have all got very different special elements about them.
Yeah, that's
true. They're all specialists in different stuff. I mean, you've got the backbreakers from Roddy. You've got the technical specialist in Kyle O'Reilly. You've got the brawler in Trent Seven. And you've got the Herculean strength from Tyler Bate. And they're all just the best things ever.
There's really no way for us to describe how good this match was. So if you're listening to this, if you're going to watch one match this week,
please watch it.
Go and watch it. Drop us a line. Let us know what you thought of this match because we loved it. There's nothing better on TV wrestling wise this week. Nothing. I believe we've got an honourable mention this week, and it's something that you actually showed me maybe a month back. It's a kind of YouTube series, and it's done by NWA Wrestling from Hollywood, and it's a YouTube series called NWA 10 Pounds of Gold. Now, Sam, seeing as you introduced me to this, you want to explain what NWA 10 Pounds of Gold is?
Yeah, it's like you say, it's a YouTube series. It's all filmed and written by the one, the only Billy Corgan.
Billy Corgan from the Smashing Pumpkins?
Yeah, or William Patrick Corgan, as he now goes by.
Indeed.
You get matches. You mainly get matches that have Nick Aldis because he's actually the current NWA champion, world's champion. But you also get a lot of backstage stuff as well. You get a lot of backstage interviews. You get sort of, it's more like a documentary feel to it, and it's sort of the story of the belt rather than anything else. Like, the whole focus of NWA 10 Pounds of Gold is the belt.
Yeah.
So it just, you know, they try and make the whole world of NWA revolve around the title rather than the other way around.
And it's such a unique presentation because unless you're in the Hollywood area or local to it, you won't get any kind of coverage of NWA. So it's a YouTube thing. It's accessible to anybody. And it's presenting this fella, Nick Aldis, who used to be Magnus in Impact Wrestling. Am I correct there, Magnus?
Correct. Yeah,
it's presenting him as this champion. He basically is this show. And you get insight into his challenges week by week, who Billy Corgan's deciding that he's going to go against, whether it be a well-known competitor or someone a bit more kind of localized. But last week, this 10 Pounds of Gold focused on Cody Rhodes, because obviously Cody Rhodes is having a match with Nick Aldis for the NWA Championship at the All In pay-per-view. So this was quite an emotional one because Cody didn't manage to pick up a win at Ring of Honor Best in the World against Dalton Castle and fellow Bullet Club member Marty Scurll. So he's talking about, you know, wanting to move on to the next thing and capture this NWA championship. He talks about it not just being because his dad held the title, but because he wants to carve out his own legacy in the business. We also got a new 10 Pounds of Gold about Nick Aldis having to defend his title one more time before he defends against Cody, against one of the Ring of Honor guys known as Flip Gordon. Now, I don't know much about this fella, but I know that he's one of the more notable names that he'll face before he faces Cody Rhodes. So what did you think about these two, dude?
Yeah, it's like I say, it's all done in sort of a documentary style, so it feels real.
Yeah, you're drawn in. It's not just some cheesy WWE vignette. We love vignettes, but it's it's someone talking about what their intentions are. You get emotionally involved, that kind of thing.
Who would have thought that Nick Aldis would be the guy to reignite the NWA World Championship?
Until you told me about this series, I had no idea that he was even still in wrestling. So when I watched this for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, so they're framing him here as a really big deal. Even though the NWA at this time basically is Nick Aldis, am I correct? It's him.
Yeah.
And a series of challenges from either local areas or from other companies. And
I mean, the biggest challenger I've seen for the title recently was PJ Black.
Yep.
But apart from that, they're all relative unknowns. So yeah, Nick Aldis is like sort of the guy.
The fact that he's getting to defend this title at the All-In pay-per-view is pretty prestigious, really. You know, the fact that Cody Rhodes is kind of trying to get Nick Aldis and the NWA title involved in this whole thing, it's just lending way more kind of focus to the NWA scene. And as well to Cody Rhodes, because he's basically doing everything at this time to promote himself. I've never seen more of Cody Rhodes than I have in the past 2 months. I'm really getting to like his character outside of the WWE. It's certainly better than Stardust ever was.
I think all in all, Billy Corgan's doing a great job with this. And I think if he carries on as he is, this could be like the NWA of old, where they're sort of, I mean, like you say, at the minute, they are breaking into Ring of Honor.
Yeah.
You know, how long before they're breaking into New Japan?
Yeah.
Or how long before they're breaking into Impact Wrestling again?
Yeah. Like I'm glad you said again, yeah, because obviously the NWA was affiliated with Impact right back at the start, from about 2002 to 2006, I think, maybe a bit later. But you're right. The independent kind of side of wrestling at the moment is exploding. And I, for one, was a WWE believer 2017-wise, but 2018 has been a different year for me. It's opened my eyes to what is outside of WWE and what is available when the product kind of gets a little bit stale. And I know you feel the same, so hell yeah, man. NWA, 10 pounds of gold. Check out that series. It's absolutely killer.
Extreme Rules Predictions.
All right, folks, welcome back to the second part of World of Trios. We're going to discuss our top three predictions for Extreme Rules pay-per-view, which is, I believe, this Sunday. So we've got three matches that we're going to talk about here. We're going to make some predictions, the first of which is the WWE title match between AJ Styles and Rusev. So I personally think the build to this one's been pretty interesting, because Rusev obviously went into it as still a fan favorite. Everyone's cheering for him, but he's got Aiden English on his side as well, who's kind of conniving. AJ Styles, obviously, massive face. Everybody loves him. What do you think about this one, dude, and who do you think is going to take the victory here?
Well, first of all, I don't think AJ Styles' face is that big.
Okay. Very good. Very, very good.
Second of all, I think AJ Styles is going to win.
Okay.
But only because I can't see Rusev winning. It's a very weird match, this. I feel like I think we've said it before, it's a stepping stone match for AJ until he can get the big one.
Isn't it strange? I was just going to say, isn't it strange, because it feels like this is a bit of a reward for Rusev, putting him in the spotlight, but then where does he go from there? I mean, he has built his career so well recently. I don't know. All I can see is AJ retaining here. That's what I'm thinking too.
Yeah, that's all I can see. I think it's going to be a great match though.
Yeah, but both guys can really go.
We both know that AJ Styles puts on great matches with anybody, but we also know that Rusev can put on great matches himself. So
I can't say any better than that, dude. So hell yeah. Onto the second one. We already talked about this one. Dolph Ziggler versus Seth Rollins, and that's in a 30-minute Iron Man match.
I'm very, very excited, because you've got two of the best workers in the WWE wrestling for a very, very long time.
Yeah, they've given these guys 30 minutes, which means they've got confidence in both their abilities, and why not? Dolph Ziggler, absolutely fantastic in the ring. Obviously, he might have got
veteran.
A little bit...
He's a veteran now, isn't he?
It's strange to say that, isn't it? Because he's still... Yeah. As long as... He has been around quite a while, well over a decade, but, yeah, he still seems like a fresh face. He manages to kind of reinvent himself, accompany different people as he does with Drew here. So, yeah, Seth Rollins, you know, is on a roll. The guy the guy's putting on great matches on TV, on pay-per-view. So I'm looking forward to a real fast-paced match here. Apart from that, I don't really know what to expect, and I'm kind of...
Who are you going for?
I'm thinking Dolph, because I really want Dolph and Drew to feud, and I want that to be the build to this.
Do you think Big Mac's going to be involved in some way?
Oh, Drew! Dude, how did I not get that? I think he will. I think it's something where Drew makes his presence known, and he's kind of like a shadow in the match, you know, like a huge shadow looming over Seth
Rollins. Like the Undertaker, standing in the corner, all present.
That's it. I don't think he'll get involved unless he needs to. I think he's going to be like a Diesel-type character in this, you know? Like,
yeah.
sneaky punches when the ref's not looking, that kind of thing. But I do think it's going to be Dolph, man. I think he's going to hold into that title, and I think it's all for the better, because I think Rollins is much better at chasing the title. Unless he's issuing open challenges, in which case I love that too.
Yeah.
Either way, I don't care. Next match that we're going to discuss is a little bit more, how would you say, controversial? I don't know.
Would you say it's a reboot for both guys?
That's the word I was looking for, yeah. I was going to say both men were involved in feuds no one really cared about, and they're bringing them together, and it's kind of working. I think the Lashley versus Roman Reigns thing, as we saw on Raw this week, is kind of working. Bobby getting in Roman's face, being that badass that we've wanted him to be for some time now, and Roman Reigns not backing down because why would he? He's the big dog.
I'm looking forward to it.
You are?
And it's the first time in a long time that I've said I'm looking forward to a match that involves Roman Reigns.
Yeah, man. I think...
Yeah, I am, because I feel like the two of these together can put on a really good match, and I just hope to Christ they're given what they need to do this.
Me too, man. I mean, Roman Reigns used to be a dynamo. The guy used to put on great matches. I don't know if you remember the match he had with Daniel Bryan a good while ago now. It was just fantastic. He can put on great matches, and so can Bobby Lashley, if given the right kind of context, I think. I mean, he's no technical guy, and he's not going to give you a five-star classic, but I think this match can be more than enjoyable.
Yeah, well, imagine seeing the power moves on a big guy like Roman Reigns.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
It could be really impressive, and I like the idea. And do you know what? Even though normally you would say it'd be really obvious, I actually can't call a winner of this.
It's strange, isn't it? Because I'm not sure where that storyline's going. Because
no, I'm not.
There's so much kind of up in the airness about Brock and the Universal title, which we'll talk about soon. I don't know where this is going. I don't know where Roman's path leads him, and I certainly don't know where Bobby's leads him after this weird feud with Sammy and now this confrontation with Reigns. So, yeah, it's a match where there's a lot at stake, but also it's going to paint us a picture of what's going on in the future. So
you've got to tell me who you think's going to win.
I think it's going to be Roman Reigns, because I'm so used to it being Roman Reigns when it's not a match against Brock Lesnar. So I just get the feeling they're giving Roman this one. I don't think...
I think it's going to be Bobby Lashley. And do you know why I think it's going to be Bobby Lashley?
I think your answer is going to be way more logical than mine. Please tell me.
I think it's going to be Bobby Lashley so that he can turn around and say that Roman Reigns doesn't win as much as he says he does.
And
you know, like the complaining about Brock Lesnar, blah blah blah, I'm the righteous champion, blah blah blah.
Yep.
Well, Bobby Lashley's called him out on all that.
Yeah, certainly has.
And if Lashley beats him at the pay-per-view, then I think that's going to be a strong part of the storyline going forward.
See, what happened there? What happened there is you had Dan, who was kind of going, been led by WWE, you know, just been led by the typical boring WWE storyline. And you thinking very logically, outside of the box, but reading into all these nuances that they've been putting into the storyline. So I think you got a great point there, man. I do hope that happens, because God knows I don't need another Roman Reigns win, really, at this point. He's done plenty. He could do with kind of giving Bobby Lashley that leg up that he needs, because he does need it right now. He's come into the company kind of cold, had some awkward storylines. He could do with a win. And Roman Reigns is not going to get damaged by that. So, yeah, man. Awesome.
Trios News.
Right, folks, so we are back with Trios News. That's three news items that happened this week. The first item we've got is more Brock Lesnar news. So Brock showed up at the UFC after Daniel Cormier, I think that's his name, picked up the win. He basically discredited the entire UFC heavyweight division and told Cormier that it was coming for him. This leads to further speculation that either Brock is due to lose the Universal title or that he'll be carrying it with him into the UFC. We should note, though, that Brock is... I don't think he's able to compete until about 2019, so that gives WWE a little bit of time to maybe get that title off him, put it back onto Raw like we want. Who knows? But yeah, a bit more Brock news for you there. All right, so the second item of news we've got is there's a new TV show called Dojo Pro. I don't know whether this is news or not, but it's a brand new wrestling-based reality show on Amazon Prime. It's basically, like I said, a reality TV type show where independent wrestlers compete for an eventual shot at the Ring of Honor television title. So this is pretty unique for Amazon, and it's the first kind of... I don't know, it's the first kind of wrestling show they've had. So they're kind of beating Netflix here in the UK, I do believe, because Netflix in America have Lucha Underground, but not over here just yet. So it's like a mix of kind of interviews, training segments, and we get some actual full matches as well, which is something really different in an already packed pro wrestling market. It features one James Storm as one of its veteran competitors, as well as Jeff Cobb, who is otherwise known in Lucha Underground as Who, Sam?
He is known as my son, Matanza Cueto.
Indeed he is. So yeah, definitely worth checking out. The whole season is up on Amazon Prime. It's just another thing to add to your list of wrestling stuff to watch, really. So check that out. The third and final piece of news we have here is the speculation that WWE is looking to put on an all-female main roster kind of pay-per-view slash main event type thing. And the rumor is that, and we don't deal in rumor and speculation here, but the rumor is they're doing this because the ladies did not receive a payday for the Greatest Royal Rumble, obviously due to the country that it was held in. Now, I'm going to ask you, dude, what would you think to something like that happening, an all-female, maybe main roster, maybe NXT pay-per-view?
I think it'd be okay.
You think it'd be okay?
Yeah, because I think you'd be able to showcase people like Kairi Sane, who I love.
You would, man. And you'd be able to showcase people like Dakota Kai, who I love. So, yeah.
You want to love her.
I don't want to, I do, but regardless, regardless of that, I think it'd be a pretty good idea. Like, I don't know if something on the scale of the Greatest Royal Rumble would be possible just yet. I'm all for the women's revolution, but I think it's growing. Bit by bit by bit, I think maybe 5 years, maybe less than 5 years, but within the next 5 years, we'll start to see stuff like this happening. But as something to just test the water, this would be a really good idea. And I do think it's cool that they're trying to kind of...
Are they not doing the a second Mae Young Classic?
Oh, they certainly are, but I think this was more of like a main roster type thing, something on a slightly grander scale in terms you know, not like one of the big four, but maybe like a female version of one of the smaller monthly pay-per-views, which I think would be great. And it's a nice thought that WWE are kind of trying to even out that paycheck for the ladies that didn't receive something at the Greatest Royal Rumble. So, yeah, awesome. And that's everything for this week's news.
A mark in history. Get it?
All right, folks, welcome to A Mark in History. This is our weekly segment where we discuss something that happened this week in pro wrestling. What have you got for us this week, Sam?
This week, I have got... Bash at the Beach 2000.
Ooh, controversial pay-per-view, man. Talk to us about it.
Well, this took place on the 9th of July 2000, believe it or not.
What?
From the Ocean Center in Daytona Beach, Florida. This is one I actually remember watching.
Okay.
And this one is very famous for a reason that I think quite a few podcasts have actually mentioned recently. This is the one where you have the big moment between Hollywood Hulk Hogan and Vince Russo.
You certainly do.
Is it a shoot? Is it a work? No one ever knows.
No. So what actually happens here is obviously it's a Hulk Hogan versus Jeff Jarrett title match, isn't it? And then during this match, we get Vince Russo, who I don't believe had appeared that much on the camera for WCW before this, coming down to the ring and ordering Jeff Jarrett to lie down for Hulk Hogan and take the pin, which he does. Hogan then does a bit of a worked kind of shoot promo where he runs down Russo and his effects on storylines in WCW. And then Russo, I believe, comes out a little bit later on and fires Hulk Hogan, announcing the new title match.
He waits until the Hulkster is left.
He does. He certainly does, because I wouldn't want that the wrath of the Hulkster. Do we know yet whether this was a factual thing that happened?
It depends on who you listen to, doesn't it? Because if you listen to Eric Bischoff, it was all shoot.
Okay.
But if you listen to, I don't know, other people, maybe including Hulk Hogan, he sort of, I don't know. Was it a way to write the Hulkster out? Because this was Hulk Hogan's last ever WCW appearance. Was he legitimately fired? It's just such a strange event.
I think it is, and it was an event that kind of signaled the kind of downturn and the beginning of the end for WCW, really, because we were already getting out of control with kind of crazy storylines and power struggles behind the scenes, who's making the most money, who's booking the storylines, that kind of thing. Yeah, not to mention adding Vince Russo into the mix.
There's a really interesting part to this all as well. I mean, when Jarrett comes down, obviously Jarrett's the champion at the time, and he comes down and he's wearing a fake belt.
Okay.
And supposedly, in real life, Hulk Hogan didn't know that this belt was fake.
Oh.
So the Hulkster wins the belt and goes on home. And then Russo comes out and fires him. Is it real? Is it not? No one knows. Later on in the night, you have Booker T versus Jeff Jarrett, who comes out with the actual belt and is still the champion. They sort of just wipe the Hogan win off the slate. It's the strangest thing.
It's crazy, isn't it? And I believe this kind of led on to the whole new breed thing, didn't it? Where they announced a whole new breed of younger wrestlers who would be taking the place of all these old wrestlers that had run the company for so long.
Yeah, well, the next pay-per-view after this was New Blood Rising.
New Blood, not New Breed. New Blood, yeah. So that's what happened there. And yeah, one of the more controversial events that I would say eventually led to the demise of WCW. And obviously it wouldn't happen until round about a year later, I don't think.
No, but yeah, I think at this point Hogan went to, what was it?
Like All-Star Wrestling or something?
All-Star Wrestling, yeah. Super All-Star Wrestling Heroes or something.
Yeah, there was like a big collaborative, wasn't there, of like all the kind of old school wrestlers.
Yeah.
It was a crazy event. I definitely recommend going back and checking out this pay-per-view. Maybe not for the whole pay-per-view, because we got some crazy matches here.
Yeah,
we got Vampiro versus the Kiss Demon.
Do you know what, though? Again, that's another guy, the Kiss Demon, who I remember.
Oh, yeah. Well, you would, wouldn't you?
Vampiro is a great favourite of mine.
Hell yeah, man. Hell yeah.
Shane Douglas as well.
Yeah, Goldberg versus Kevin Nash as well. I mean, I don't think we'd ever consider any of these matches classics, but obviously this angle that happens at the end is well worth watching just because of its impacts on impact might be a key word there. Impacts on professional wrestling. Then on.
Just looking at the matches, you've got Daphne with Crowbar.
Daphne, a TNA favourite later on,
Who defeated Miss Hancock with David Flair. You know who Miss Hancock is, don't you?
Tell me.
Stacey Keibler.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's right. And that was in a wedding gown match. Oh, I bet that was amazing.
Oh, wow. Hell yeah, man. Five stars. I don't know. Yeah, I took a look at the card. It didn't seem like something I'd want to revisit as a whole pay-per-view. But hell yeah, this was a monumental kind of thing for the wrestling industry. It led to a lot of things. So that's a mark in history this week. Thank you very much, sir. All right, folks, and welcome back. This is our most over segment.
Over like Rover. Oh, yeah. Dig it.
So each week, Sam and I give you two wrestlers from all over the wrestling landscape that we thought were the most over that week. Last week, we gave you two superstars to pick from, and we put that poll up on our social media sites. Who did we give people to choose from, dude?
Last week, we gave people Pentagon Jr. and Sammy Callahan.
Alrighty, dude. I know that Pentagon picked up the win on Instagram, so who picked up the win on your end on Twitter?
By a landslide, Pentagon Jr.
Okie doke. I figured that would happen. The guy is red hot at the moment. Sammy Callahan also really playing a great heel, so I can't see why anyone would want to pick him. So, hell yeah, Pentagon, well done. This week, we're going to give you two more superstars to choose from, so please go and vote once we've told you on our social media sites. That's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. All right, dude, who is your most over this week?
This week, my most over is Tyler Bate.
Very, very good. And why are you picking Tyler Bate this week?
Because Tyler Bate is the best thing since sliced bread.
Yeah, yeah.
In my opinion.
I think I've seen him do a sliced bread before as well. So
yeah. This guy's got it all. He can do everything. He can do comedy. He can do Herculean strength. He can do technical. He can do high flying. He does the you know, the standing shooting star press. He can do everything, and he's just so lovable. He's just got, he's got the face, he's got the look, he's got everything. I'm just going to keep saying he's got everything. He's my everything.
He is
Tyler
your
Bate
everything.
Is my everything. Yeah. Tyler Bate is my everything.
I see a proposal on the horizon, my friend.
It's quite funny. I was saying to, when I watched the tag match on NXT, I was watching it with my wife, and I said to her, Trent Seven is how I look now, and Tyler Bate is how I want to look.
I think that's slightly unfair on you, my friend. Slightly unfair. But hell yeah, man. I mean, Tyler Bate.
Slightly unfair on Trent Seven.
Harsh, man.
And I apologise, Trent, if you're listening, which I know you are.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, I think that's a great choice, man. I mean, not unlike the Velveteen Dream, this kid is early 20s, still got so far to go. So, yeah, great choice, man. My pick this week is Adam Cole,
baby!
I didn't realize you can do it that slow. I'll do it again. 1, 2, 3. Adam Cole, baby! We've not matched up at all. 1, 2, 3. Adam Cole, baby! Yeah, and my reason for picking this guy is, since coming to NXT, he's just been formidable. I mean, not only has he picked up the reins as the leader of the Undisputed Era, but he's putting on great matches. I mean, the first time I was truly impressed by this guy was in I think he was in the War Games match. I think he's just got a face that you want to hate as well. He not only does he command the audience's respect with his whole Adam Cole baby thing, but this guy, he's just despicable. He is the kind of new Shawn Michaels of 1997, and I love him, and that's my reason. Totally is. So Adam Cole for me, and Tyler Bate for you. You can vote for these on our poll, and that's all of our social media sites. So that's twitter.com/IIOYpodcast. That's Instagram.com/isitoveryetpod, and that's Facebook.com/isitoveryetpod. So please, go and vote. Right, folks, this has been another awesome episode of Is It Over Yet Wrestling Podcast. We hope you've enjoyed it, and we hope you'll come back and visit us again next week. So from me, Dan Cooper, and from this guy, Sam Whaley, take care of yourselves.
Hurrah.